And now the Provincial Intelligence Coordinating Centers, they didn't get off the ground, but the PICS did, right?
PICS, they finally, I think finally the decision was that they hadn't been able to convince anybody to go with the PICCs, but we would build the PICS anyway, and then once they became successful, people would say, hey man, this is a great spot. We will send all of our prisoners there, and then they would start moving in, and they would set up PICCs eventually around, build them around the PICS, instead of having just PICS be part of them when they first started. And that never happened. I don't know who made the decision. I think it was a question that we couldn't get the U.S. agencies all to agree, something like that. That's got to be a meeting.
Okay.
It had to be a combined.
Okay.
And maybe it was the Provincial Intelligence Combined, it was Coordinated Centers or something.
Yeah.
But you needed the Vietnamese Army, the Vietnamese Police, the civilian authorities.
And they couldn't agree on anything.
You needed the U.S. Army and the State Department and AID and CIA and everybody. And we could get our own side to agree, much less get the Vietnamese to agree.
Because it's important, back in 64, there wasn't a war yet, still.
Well, there was a war. There had been a war. They weren't killing many Americans.
But there weren't American, the American forces hadn't arrived yet.
No, they came in 65, June of 65. First real. There was a lot of Americans there, hell of a thousand of them.
Yeah, 13,000 in 64. Like,
but they were, MACB advisors, special forces. There was helicopter support guys and forward air, forward air controllers and artillery units and stuff like that. They flew those little airplanes there. So I spotted some guys, sent some plants. But as far as, battalions, regiments, nothing that. That started came in 65.
Then a little bit, a little bit about your background in Korea before you came over. Can you talk a little bit about what you were doing there?
I worked interrogation.
Okay. In Seoul?
In Seoul, yeah. I got there, I never been involved in interrogation until I got there.
Okay.
People ask me, I think that any group in the military was any tougher than the special forces. I had to say yes to SEALs.
Yeah, SEALs. Yeah, yeah.
They were a rough group.
Well, he so you get there in November '64, right?
Yeah.
And you go to Saigon and
I go to the NIC.
To the NIC. Okay. Okay, well, let's talk about you in November '64 and basically what kind of orientation you get or what you're told, what kind of situation you find there in November of '64.
Before I left?
No, when you first get to the...
when I got there?
Yeah, what's the situation like?
I was brought down to the interrogation center and said, this is where you're going to work.
Okay.
This is what you're going to do. You're going to advise X number of Vietnamese interrogators, you work with them.
Okay.
They will bring in their initial debriefing of the guy they're working with. You will give them requirements.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own requirements, they have their own, but you'll give them additional requirements.
And the requirements is what kind of information they want to get from them.
Oh yeah.
Is that what the requirements are?
We had standard requirements that we wanted, depending on where the guy was from. In the north,
okay.
If he was from the north, or where he was from, what units he was with,
okay.
How they were organized, where they were trained, and all that good stuff.
Okay.
And the Vietnamese interrogators knew basically what they were supposed to be getting,
okay.
But sometimes their real interests wouldn't necessarily match ours all the way down the line. They'd be one thing, there'd be other things that we'd be interested in that they wouldn't really care about. We wanted to get, so that's where the American advisors would come in to tell them that, wait a minute, now you got to get this. It seemed to me that the Vietnamese were more interested in being able to take this guy and convict him somewhere, throw him in jail,
okay.
As opposed to, they wanted order of battle type information.
Okay.
And they also, they wanted to get what the quote, infrastructure, unquote, of the organization, of the units they were with. But we, I don't know, we basically wanted the same thing they did, but we wanted other things too, and that they weren't too interested in collecting sometimes in the way of intelligence that
maybe like kind of equipment they were using or something, like just more specific
detail? Anything about foreign weapons that they had, they were using,
okay.
Or any training they got, or any any notice of any foreigners that were in
like where they get, were Russians advising them or something like that?
Okay. That sort of stuff. And usually we found out no. But I remember one particular guy, I'm not sure it was even the one I was advising, but one of the prisoners they had was talking about being trained in the use of 105 millimeter howitzers.
Okay.
And I said, Jesus, that's amazing. What the hell? They got howitzers they're sending down here with these guys?
Yeah.
So I went back to ask him, did you ever see any 105 howitzers anywhere, in any place you were, like Vietnam? He said, no. I said, why'd they train you? He said, well, they figured that when the U.S. Army came in force, they'd be bringing them all. We'd capture them. We better know how to use them once we capture them. And I thought that was pretty sharp. They knew. I mean, and of course, we were interested in a lot of information about things in the North, too.
Yeah.
That the South Vietnamese Army could care less about. They just wanted to know what was going on against them in the South, whereas if we had a guy that had been North for whatever length of time, or came from there, and we wanted to get everything we could about the North. We wanted all sorts of information. Okay. How do you travel on a train from one place to another?
I got it.
What kind of identification papers do you need? They wanted information they could turn around and use in their battle against the Viet Cong. Even though they were supposedly the Central Intelligence Organization running all this. But they were there collecting intelligence. They still were mostly almost all military. They were basically military mind. They wanted tactical and strategical military intelligence.
Now the NIC is this, the National Interrogation Center, that's the one on the river now, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right down on the river. It was part of a great big naval compound down there, and just one part of the whole overall compound. And you had a wing of officers, in which the American chief was always a military guy, even though it was run by a CIA guy. And there was a guy that worked down there, had an office there, and stayed there every day. It was a military guy. And the interrogators, they came over. I didn't really know that much. I was not in there that long before they pulled me out and put me into the PIC program.
Okay.
So even though I was assigned there, I didn't spend that many months. Once I got into the PIC program, I very rarely ever went down to the NIC.
Maybe how many American advisors altogether?
I'd say interrogation advisors, when I got there, there were three, four. I was the fifth one that actually worked with the interrogators.
Yeah.
There were three enlisted types. They were, I think all of them were Air Force, and one Army officer, and myself. And then, of course, there was the Army or Air Force, I forget, which was then there was two different ones when I was there. That were the deputy chief of the American group. And then my boss was a CIA guy. And that was it, as far as the Americans went. Like I say, we had but three enlisted men, and I came in. I was the fourth to actually work with.
When you get shifted over to the PIC program?
Oh, I got the PIC program. I guess we went up, but there was a conference up in, they had asked me to help up in Natron with this first PIC that they were getting going. And they had asked help from the NIC, send some people up there. So I went up along with a couple of these guys, some enlisted guys and this captain. We went up first. looked at the place and found out what kind of staff he was going to have and figured out how we were going to train him.
Okay.
And while we were up there and trying to break these guys in and all, the man who was in the John called down on a single sideband radio and asked Tucker if he could keep me there until this conference they were having of all of our people from all over the country were going to have a conference in Detroit and meet the new chief who just kind of was taking, had taken Paul Heiss's place. And so he said, I just want to keep Muldoon there until this thing, because he wanted to be able to show up as interrogation center to the people from a
first. So the military guys go back and you stay there?
Yeah, they had basically done their job.
Yeah, okay.
And I had stayed around. He wanted me to stick around with him and clean up any loose ends and make sure everything was really going to be. I was talking about a few more days until this conference, and these military guys wouldn't have been involved in that anyway. So when they came up, Tucker and Red, and everybody else in this conference, that and my immediate boss, who was the new chief, Sammy, they sort of double-teamed him, Red and Tucker.
Yeah.
Tucker first told me, he said, look, John, he said, I want you to come in and work with me, and we're going to, this program is going to get, we're going to build and build and build, and I need somebody to oversee the whole operation. I want you to do it. I've already talked to Red. Red says, fine, you'll go along with it. And we're going to talk to Sam. I said, they're fine with me, but, you know, Sammy's my boss.
But Tucker took you away from him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Installment from Sammy. And, of course, I had to get these other guys eventually to come out. And each time we opened up a pick and set up a training schedule. And they were all Sammy's guys, and he had to agree to let them go. And everything worked out fine, because Sammy was very cooperative on it. We had this big conference, and everybody was there.
They
all got a tour of the interrogation center. It was filled with prisoners.
Yeah.
They had picked them up from, they had prostitutes, and you name it. Not only did they have one Viet Cong in this place, but this guy wanted to show up, same with a bunch of prisoners in it. So he got his police buddies to bring in a bunch of convicts and throw them into the cells.
Okay.
And then after the conference was over, they all went back to the regular jail, and then they went about the business of actually putting...
When is this conference, to best of your memory?
It was after the evacuation of the Benton, so it was after February. I would say sometime around, let me see, April, it was after the bombing, I believe.
Okay.
So the bombing was, what, the 30th of April, or whatever, was it 30th of March? It was the bombing of the embassy. It was after St. Patrick's Day.
Okay, so either March or April.
End of March, end of April. So it was sometime in April or May is when we had this guy. And that's when things really started getting off the ground with the picks.
So when do you start going, they make that conference, they decide you're going to go, that's around...
sometime April or May.
Yeah, April, 65. May of 65. You go down
to Phuket and check out that place and then set up a training schedule with these two GIs. And the captain was still involved in it a lot then.
Did you go around and pick out the provinces to start them in based on where the action was the heaviest, where the population was the biggest?
Well,
was there some sort of plan behind it?
They did have a plan as to where they were going to go. Each province, now each region had a regional director.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And it was up to the regional director to pick out the priorities within his region, which provinces should have the picks built first.
Now, is it the region guy who's the police guy, not the paramilitary guy?